Podcasting 2.0 for June 11th, 2021, episode 41. We are the Super Spreaders. And I'll give you context to that eventually. Hello, everybody. It's Friday. Time once again for board meeting. That's right. Your two directors are here today for Podcasting 2.0. Everything going on at podcastindex.org and podcastindex.social. We got a lot to talk about. Road stories, you name it. I'm Adam Curry in Austin, Texas, and in Alabama, the man who hasn't changed in the 7 years since I last saw him, my friend on the other end, Dave Jones.
A whole week of sleep with no rooster.
You did kind of get the raw end of the deal on the Airbnb in Miami.
I mean, so I woke up at, what was it, like
3 o'clock,
3:45 in the morning.
Yeah.
to the extreme rooster crow.
Yeah.
That was not fun.
Yes. We are, of course, referring to the podcastindex.org journey to Miami for Bitcoin 2021, which we did on behalf of Podcasting 2.0, of course, to spread cheer, mainly to meet people.
Yeah.
And I would describe this whole event, maybe even our whole journey, as Comic-Con meets Fire Festival. It was kind
That's
of
great. Yeah, it's a great description.
And it really, you know, we're on a very small budget here, and we paid for most of the stuff out of our own pocket. But I think the Airbnb, I believe, was was from the company. Org. So Eric is very frugal, and you guys were already there.
Our org chart is not big.
Just the three of us. Yeah. So I flew in later because I had to hustle after doing the No Agenda show. And I'm in the cab, and I'm, driving. It's like, oh, this is a nice street here. And I knew we were kind of close to the convention center, and the guy hangs a right. And I'm like, whoa, where I'm right. I'm in an episode of The Wire. This is crazy. This drug deals being done. Is this? And you're like, text me when you're out front.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll come and unlock the gate. There's a huge wrought iron gate in front of this place. It was like, $250 a night or something. It had three bedrooms. You guys had graciously given me the master bedroom. That was very kind. You didn't have to do that. In fact, I fully considered to be shoved into the corner when I arrived.
You are the pod father. I mean, there's certain privileges.
Yeah, now you're talking, baby. Yeah, yeah.
No, I got the front room so that if there was a drive by,
you'd catch it.
Yeah, I was going to be the human shield for you two. But I think that's what they like on the street. I think that's what they call. Like, there's this huge black rooster that just kept walking across the street all day long.
Yeah.
And, I mean, this thing was as big as, like, a dog.
So, throw a saddle on that bitch.
Yeah. I think that's the name of their meth that they were cooking over there, the black rooster.
It was black rooster meth.
Hot around Miami. Yeah.
I like it. Maybe that should be our logo, black rooster.
Yeah. I like that.
But it was great to see you again. I'd seen Eric recently, of course, and you'd never met Eric. Well, nope. And the three of us are quite a pair. We really vary in sizes in all kind of different ways. I'm sure that people saw us coming, going like, "Who are those guys?"
Well, here's how it goes. Like, there's a minimum requirement to be in the Bitcoin community, and I'm not in it. So like, you and Eric are like 6'100".
Yeah.
And I'm like 5'10".
And Ryan Gentry is taller than I am.
Yeah. I mean, like I was standing at one point, it was you, Eric, Ryan Gentry standing there and me, and I was just staring at everybody's chest. But I did have some support because Graham Krizik is also a small guy.
Roy.
Jack Mahler's a small, Roy is small. So, there's like this extreme dichotomy.
Yeah. Tim is pretty. Tim, yeah. Oh my God. So and I'll just give a little color around this. So the event itself, there's this convention hall, and really it was split into two parts. One is an auditorium where which was nice and air conditioned. You sit there and watch what's going on stage. So very much like a really big show, kind of like an Apple event, that or the old Apple events with the audience.
And the stage.
If the Apple event was in a high school auditorium. A gym, a high school gym.
High school gym. And then on the in the backside, they had, you know, vendor booths and all that. And then outside, it was a bunch of bubble tents. Mind you, this is 85 degrees, but it's Miami heat. And no, it was disgusting.
150% humidity. Yeah, it was awful.
It was disgusting. And then I presume the people who paid for a tent was outside. That was the stacking sats stage. And that was clearly, you know, I think Lightning Labs paid for that. And I'm sure a couple other people felt like a pay to play, which is not uncommon for conferences. And I would say in general, it's a total waste of time to go there and watch anyone speak, because you look at the videos online. That's, you know, now you can really follow the conversation. You're not sweltering or, you know, it's, you don't get the same energy necessarily, but for that,
you didn't even talk about the length of the line to get into that.
Yeah, place. Why don't you fill everybody in?
Oh, I mean, like, so we get there and get out of the Uber and then walk across there, and it looks like the line is fairly long. So we start walking down the block, and then we get maybe, I don't know what, 60 feet. And we're like, yeah, this is right. I mean, we'll just join the crowd or whatever.
It was moving. It was moving.
Yeah. And then this lady accosted us and like, hell no, y'all get to the back of the line. She started shooting us a bird and all this kind of stuff. And then, so we were like, wait.
I felt really bad about that. But I didn't realize until we walked another mile and it was still not the back of the line. We went, screw it.
We went like all the way around the block and then started going down the backside of the other block. Mm-hmm. And you were like, nah, let's just go to a bar.
Yeah. And so we waited a little bit and then we got in, and for our money, the best part of being there was going for drinks with Roy from Breeze and Tim from Ellen Pay. Having a nice chat with Tim, really just connecting with everybody, meeting. I met Elizabeth Stark from Lightning Labs, who was very, very complimentary about all the work that's being done with the Value for Value streaming payments. And this is just an accepted thing now. You know, this streaming Value for Value, it's understood, it's accepted. Either someone has not heard of it at all, or they know all about it, at least in this crowd, obviously.
Yeah, we got one of the guys on the Mastodon. He was the one that yelled, "Go podcast!" you got a few of those.
Yeah, I got some in the mornings and stuff like that. Yeah, that was nice. But it was good to see all these people. They're real. They're just people. It had its fair amount of booth babes and Satoshi sluts and, you know, stuff like that walking around. And you know, there were some interesting things that happened. You know, Max Kaiser started his meme fest, which, I'm starting to understand him even more than I did already. And I did an interview for his RT show, Kaiser Report. I did it in one of those sweltering bubble tents. And Max was pretty wiped.
The convection oven.
Yeah, he was pretty wiped, you know, because he expended so much energy. I'm sure most people have seen him just going nuts on stage at the opening with the "fuck Elon, we're not selling." Yeah. But this is all very calculated. You know, now he's doing the "fuck Elon" world tour, which will kick off in Austin on July 8th.
I didn't know about this tour.
Yeah, I'm helping him put it together. There's a couple guys here actually. Yeah, and we got a venue already booked, and it's going to be Max doing a 45-minute set first with a punk band.
I want the T-shirt with the tour dates on the back.
Exactly. But he's really meaning it. He understands exactly how he can use his position and his followers. And this is just a meme, that's a lot of what Bitcoin is. It turns out, you know, the sentiment of the market is very interesting. And so I think he's a really important part of this point in time for Bitcoin. It's very interesting to me. Then Jack Mahlers, who is, he's the guy behind, well, the Zap Wallet, but also Strike. And he's very young. He's like in his mid-20s. Everything in my body wants me to not like him, but I can't help it. when I hear him, like, and I think it's because I see some of younger me in him, in a way, you know, doing kind of little touch of arrogance there. It's like, yeah. Oh man, it's so much easier if you tone that down a little bit. But the whole thing kind of represents the group of the age group and generation that is so much more open to an alternative way of society in general, and for them the core is the money. Stop fucking with our money. And I like that. Yeah. I really like that. He communicates that quite well. And then of course he also shepherded with a number of other people, but he is a great face guy. The adoption of Bitcoin as a national currency in El Salvador.
Yeah. So that's, I'm like you, I wanted to, and I want to talk about the El Salvador. I want to get dig in and get deep on El Salvador.
Well, before we do that, okay. Just to wrap up the main point of Bitcoin 2021, I was reading in Bloomberg this morning. It was a super spreader event.
Oh, did they say it?
Yes. Yes. It was super spreader. Now, I don't know if they meant coronavirus or podcasting 2.0, but a healthy combo, I think, was achieved.
There was maybe... I think all totaled at the conference itself, I maybe saw 10 masks.
Oh, yeah, if that. And most of it was people who were working the event, you know, serving food or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, there's some people I wish had worn masks when I saw them. But I think it was definitely a super spreader event. For sure.
Hey, listen, I make the jokes around here.
Yeah, okay. I'll relinquish that back to you.
All right, let's talk about El Salvador.
Oh, you want to? Okay.
Yeah, sure. Right. Why not?
I'm like you. I thought that Mahler's, I kept wanting to not like the guy because he's got that arrogance and he's got the Lambo and all that. By the way, I said there would be a Lambo and you said there would not be a Lambo.
There was a Lambo. The former New York banker sent me a picture. He said, hey man, it's not yellow, but it's a Lambo. We have a longstanding joke. From my bachelor days, when I divorced, he took me out for drinks and he said, let's buy a Lambo. And we decided it would be a yellow Lambo with a midget in bikini driving it. And I woke up the next day and had to go look on my phone to make sure I hadn't actually ordered one.
Man, that was bad.
So there was a Lambo. I stand corrected. There was a lot of shitcoin activity going on.
Oh, a lot of that. Yeah, yeah. It was not yellow. It was an orange Lambo.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to not like him because of all that too, and the race car and all that jazz. But then, I see you underestimate this guy, and then you see what the strategy is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right. I mean, he's right on. I mean, that it really comes down to. I mean, he's seeing the broader landscape here. But I don't think that the broader land, I don't think that what his vision or any of the Bitcoin people's vision is, I don't think any of that really is fully encompassing the whole picture of what is going on. I mean, clearly it can't. And yeah. I think a lot of people are misunderstanding things from many sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. I don't think that we really understand what would happen in any way, shape, form, or fashion, if multiple countries at once all decided to do this.
Pandemonium.
Bitcoin.
Pandemonium.
Yeah. The Bitcoin people that think that are all super excited and locked in and think, oh my God, this is just awesome. I don't think they fully understand the ramifications of what they want.
Oh, I think that El Salvador or one of the next countries, because I think more countries will do this. I have $100 trillion in Zimbabwe banknote. I mean, those guys could benefit from something different. One of these countries is going. So, they accept it. I'm not sure if they will actually exchange it into their national currency. I forget the name of it.
Well, they use the U.S. dollar.
They use the U.S. dollar in general. But, you know, so the threat now coming out of Janet Yellen is, or wherever it came from, the U.S. government. Well, we don't want countries taking Bitcoin and allowing it to be converted into their local currency.
And that came by the IMF.
Yeah, and if a country does that, I am quite worried about finding out if the dollar is indeed backed by the full faith of the United States, because that means the military.
Yeah.
That means the military. I mean, Saddam Hussein, you know, and even, what's his name, Gaddafi, you know, they wanted to sell portions of their oil in euros, and there was a talk of a gold dinar. Did not work out well.
Yeah, the whole African financial union or whatever that was called.
Yeah, but on the other hand, just by this conversation taking place and by everything that's happening with Bitcoin specifically, people are becoming aware of it, and people are going, "Huh." You know, it's beautiful to see Tina start to understand what's really going on, and unless you've really studied the monetary system, you know, then you kind of might know it a little bit, and you might start hearing about fractional reserve banking. And then when you start to look in how everything works, like, oh, holy crap. And it's just beautiful to see people start to understand that and go, oh, this is not a good idea.
So this is a complex topic, and it took me a few days to really just sort of get my mind in the gear that I felt like I kind of understood where I even stood with it.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is, well, let me read part of this, and I got some clips. I don't even remember where this article came from, but I think this kind of compresses everything into the most pertinent data here. And it says, and they're talking about Bitcoin becoming legal tender in El Salvador. And it says the move also brings financial risks. Experts say as the cryptocurrency gains and loses huge amounts of value in a flash at times overnight. Okay, I think the first thing to remember is that those gains and losses of value are in relation to the dollar.
Yeah.
That does not accurately reflect. There's a whole idea between Austrian economics and and other monetary systems. And I would consider myself an Austrian, is the subjective value of money and money as a store of value. And so a lot of people think money, as some hard monies, are a quote unquote store of value, but that's not as solid as a lot of people think. That's way more squishy and depending on how you look at it. And I think that as far as local things going on within El Salvador, this currency, Bitcoin as a currency, may not fluctuate nearly as much as it does on a global currency market. So I'm not so concerned about. I think that's a little bit of FUD.
Well, it comes down to the long term time preference, where someone knows that against their local currency, the satoshis they're receiving may be less in value, but they know that long term, it's going to be more valuable. For instance, sats and boosts that were streamed to me 4 days ago are now worth 10% more.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you start pricing in sats, and I'm surprised myself at how seamlessly I converted to satoshis, and I'm no longer really doing conversions in my head anymore. It's just, I can feel it. It's like, oh, 500,000 sats. Oh, that's, I know what that's worth, you know, without even really translating it to the actual number.
Yeah, I do that when I refill my wallets in the podcast apps. I kind of just instinctively know about what I want to spend in terms of sats, not in terms of dollars, you know.
By the way,
in terms of dollars.
I quintuple boosted Podland today.
No, I gave him 10,000 sats over the course of the whole episode.
It was fantastic.
Yeah. They know the system now.
But this is what I'm talking about. That was a listener pod producer interaction that resulted in a real value transfer of something you can, you know, it's fungible. You can use that value somewhere else, not just between the two of us.
Yeah,
this is a big deal, and we, for some reason, overnight. And maybe it's portions of you and I boosting, but we got a lot of transactions.
That's interesting. I saw you post that.
I mean, like double what we normally get, overnight, and it wasn't necessarily big, because I look at the counts instead of the total amount.
So it was just a general increase in transaction volume.
Yes. So either people were listening longer or more people were listening. You know, and I look at the podcast index, say, okay, it looks like we got 4 people per minute coming in. You know, that's kind of a good spot for a minute, 4 payments a minute. Well, anyway, I'm sorry. Back to El Salvador.
Oh, no. That's fine. The next part of this thing says
words I never thought would come out of my mouth. And now, back to El Salvador.
Yes, Adam. Thank you very much. El Salvador. This next piece, it says El Salvador's economy depends heavily on money sent back from abroad.
Yeah. Remittances.
According to the World Bank, these so-called remittances to the country made up nearly $6 billion, or almost 20% of its GDP. I mean, 20% of El Salvador's GDP is coming from repatriated money from overseas. Yep. That's evidently on a consistent basis.
Of which 50% only really gets there, I think, some astronomical number.
Yeah, and so that is what made me realize that Jack Mahler's, this was the perfect wedge strategy that he used, because Lightning is literally a zero fee transmission mechanism.
Exactly.
To get money from anywhere in the world into El Salvador.
Yep.
And that is, I mean, that's a pretty impressive strategy for a 20 something year old, to realize that and I'm sure he's not, I mean, he didn't just figure that out himself. I mean, there's clearly some more stuff going on, and that
he also, he has ties to El Salvador, I think.
Does he?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, well, he was there for 3 months, and I forget what the story is, but it doesn't matter. It's
the result is the same. That's the other thing people may not realize, is that El Salvador already had a robust Bitcoin market.
Oh, yeah. It's not like a hell of a lot changed, except for some legalities and recognition, and that usually drives culture.
Well, that's another thought that I had, is that, you know, when... Let me see what clip I had.
By the way, I think Nigeria would be the one to go next. I mean,
South America?
Nigeria is bursting. They have it's the same problem. Remittances. 2 million Nigerians are in the rest of the world sending money back.
Yeah, any country that's in that situation, I mean, like, why would then you get into the... That's when you get into the geopolitics, is when this stuff happened. So I just started trying to get a thumbnail sketch of what El Salvador was all about, because I know I usually go under two sort of ideas whenever some story like this comes out. And number one, that our first understanding of a story is probably wrong. Mm-hmm. And number two, the media in general just cobbles together narratives from the people that are the most vocal about a subject. And those are usually going to be geopolitical actors like NGOs and financially interested parties and that kind of thing. So it doesn't help you to really just go out and read a bunch of headline stories. Mm. You really have to dig in deeper to find out what's going on. And if you dig into El Salvador, I mean, the narratives are just all over the map. And you got MS-13 and, Trump's deal with them on immigration, remittances, NGO money, drugs, human trafficking. You've got all of these different things there. And I even saw something about somebody said the Spanish Central Bank, Central Bank of Spain, because El Salvador used to be a colony of Spain.
Yeah.
That the Spanish Central Bank still holds like a huge amount of gold.
Yeah.
That they won't give back to El Salvador. There's all these things going on. And so you look at a development like that and you're like, oh, well, you have to understand that there's a lot going on that you don't know.
And the presumption I have is that Bukele, is that his name? Bukele?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's Gen Z. And my presumption is he understands.
Well, he's also Trump. play this clip. Bukele is Trump light.
Él busca tener el control de la narrativa de todo el país.
Sergio Arras, an editor at the independent news site El Faro, says Bukele, with his voracious tweets and attacks on the press, controls the narrative in the country, framing himself as a great reformer. That, as well as his perceived handling of the pandemic and free food handouts, has kept him very popular. His approval ratings frequently top 90%.
Yeah, I mean, he's a voracious tweeter and populist.
He could not be more polar opposite Trump when it comes to Bitcoin.
No, yeah, true. Yeah, you want to play that one?
Okay, I see. Yeah, sure.
Bitcoin, it just seems like a scam. I was surprised, you know, with us it was at 6,000 and much lower. I don't like it because it's another currency competing against the dollar. Essentially, it's a currency.
Now, this particular quote by him is important for a number of reasons. One, he says it's essentially a currency. That's not the generally accepted view by the United States government. They treat it as property, not as a currency. Mm-hmm. You can be taxed on it as property. He also says, under us, it was 6,000. Which leads me to believe if he were to become president again, he would do his best to suppress the price again, but not by suppressing Bitcoin, but by making the dollar stronger. See, he understands exactly how this works, and he knows that, I think, and I think he's very smart, actually, in this regard, that he knows that this thing is not going away. What I would worry about is how he might respond to countries, you know, in essence, converting U.S. dollars into local currency through the Lightning Network or the methodology of Bitcoin. Because that might drive him crazy, because he knows that the only reason why the United States, well, we have this kind of fallback position. It's like, hey, it's our money. You know, you don't use our money, you're fucked. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, that's what it is. So we would have to, and I think the United States can do it, because I think we're very creative people. We would have to compete on our quality and our intelligence and our creativity. And, you know, nothing would just be a given if we moved to a complete Bitcoin standard, Bitcoin economy where, you know, everything's kind of, equal.
This is a direct shot over the bow of the economic hitman model of geopolitics.
Yes, absolutely.
And you know that's the U.S. dollar. And I don't know. See, that's the thing. I just don't know what is going to ultimately happen out of all this. I mean, the cynic in me wants to say, "Oh, well, I know what's going to happen. War is coming." But
possibly.
But at the same time, I guess what stems a little bit of that cynicism, though, is this larger idea that I think we saw at the conference too, and with Trump. So you have Trump coming out, sort of not coming out, but I mean Trump going public against Bitcoin in a clear statement. Well, then you also have the swamp, so to speak, who is also anti-Bitcoin. So there's this brain freeze there. It's like, well, Trump doesn't like it, but we don't like it either. What do we do? Well, then you add to that another piece, which is some of this, and you heard it in that clip a while ago with Bukele, and he said he's got a 90% approval rating. We hate this guy.
Surprise,
we hate
everything surprise. He's doing. Yeah,
but he really has cleaned things are better, and his people love him, so it's like, what do we do?
Well, I'll say one thing, that the war is already started. The war is on. I mean, the
financial war.
The war against Bitcoin is on, for sure. That's what this part of what this is this ransomware business. Because that's what Elon was all about. Bitcoin bad, Bitcoin stop the gas flow, Bitcoin, and this is my favorite, is destroying the earth. With its energy use. And this is the 1-2 punch that is brilliant from Max Kaiser, because it came from him. He said, hey, Bitcoin's going to use the volcanic energy in El Salvador, which is true. They have it. They have thermal energy plants that are, you know, right at the volcano, taking the heat from the volcano. And, you know, and the finance minister or whoever else in El Salvador, like, yeah, of course, it's a great idea. It's the best way to do Bitcoin. So, yeah, the war is literally
going to convert the carbon coming out of the earth into money.
Yeah.
That is like there again. That's that brain freeze. It's like the another example. Here's another example. The Laura Loomer, Jack Dorsey thing.
That was crowd, fantastic. That was so beautiful to see.
They had the crowd in that auditorium had no idea how to react. Like they were frozen.
Like a dumb kangaroo stuck in the headlights of the Roo shooter. Huh?
Yeah.
What's happening here? She's calling him a human rights abuser because he deplatforms politicians. And like, what? Yeah. But it's Jack, man. It's Jack. a little bit of that adoration at this conference in general. Oh, man. It's him. Oh, it's that guy. Oh, it's like, oh, ooh, yeah.
Play this. Okay, this is from, let's see. Okay, I want you to play Vietnam Brain Freeze, but I may stop it in the middle. It's a little bit of a long clip, but this comes from that documentary called Can't Get You Out of My Head.
Adam Curtis.
Adam Curtis. And I'll say this, that documentary is weird.
It's tough to go from episode to episode. Like, what? Where did it end and why am I seeing this?
Yeah. You at the end, when you're finished watching it, if you watch all six parts, you know that you just watched something extremely important and brilliant.
But you don't know why.
Yeah, exactly. So, go for it.
In 1979, a Frenchman called Bernard Kouchner, who had founded Médecins Sans Frontières, chartered an old cargo ship, and he went to rescue thousands of starving refugees trapped on a tiny island. Refugees that no one else seemed to care about. They were fleeing from the new communist government that had taken over Vietnam. To many liberals in the West, the communists had been heroes in their fight against America.
I mean, the boat people are now facing piracy. I mean, they are attacked by pirates 10 times in their trip, is still alive. And nobody are taking care of them. And that's our purpose. It's not possible to shut up now.
Kouchner's action had a powerful effect in the West because it started to undermine the self-belief of a whole generation who saw themselves as radical and pure. Possibly, being good was not as easy as it seemed.
Okay, you can stop it. That's that line, being good is maybe not as easy as it seems. That just seems to sum up so much of what is happening geopolitically right now.
Yeah.
Because he's talking about the boat people, the people that fled Vietnam after the U.S. pulled out starting in 75 and continued for two decades afterwards. It was like almost a million people. The liberals who had criticized the U.S. involvement, rightly so, criticized the U.S. involvement in the war, you know, they had to sort of face this humanitarian crisis. Like,
you know, I remember the boat people. I was alive when that happened.
Yeah. It was like 40,000 people living on this little island starving to death.
Yeah.
Because they fled the brutal communism of the North Vietnamese. There again, that I think that you can't say, and it needs to be clear that you can't say that this side did everything right, this side did everything right. The reality is complicated, and reality has all kinds of contributing, complicating factors to it.
And truths.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can, but that's not the way everybody wants to see things. Everybody wants to see things in a clean, left-right, you know, dichotomy, but it's just not like that, and that's not realistic. And so whenever you have these things like Jack Dorsey is, you know, he deplatforms people on left and right all the time off of Twitter, but yet we want to see him as a Bitcoin hero.
Yeah.
No, you got to – that's not the way this stuff works. But I think that that whole idea is just beginning to show itself more and more. You can see it with, okay, well, do we want El Salvadorans to be economically independent, because this article talks about 70% of El Salvador's population lacks access to traditional financial services.
Right.
And so do we want the people of Latin America to be economically independent? Yes. But do we want them to do it in such a way and I'm speaking as just some general, you know, bystander. Do we want them to do it in such a way that like takes us off our podium and potentially gives them the power to have their own, you know, system independent of
us? No, can't have that.
But then if they go off on their own and have their own financial independence, well then we can't control them anymore.
Yes, baby. Exactly. You know?
And so, I mean, it's this brain freeze that people are having where they want to help, but they don't want the results of the help.
Well, there's a lot of, that's not the only reason, I don't think. To me, it's just like podcasting 2.0. You know, everybody wants to make it really successful, but squirrel, Facebook is doing podcasting. Squirrel, there was, you know.
Yeah.
So people, I deep down, I think everyone understands the importance of an independent podcast infrastructure and ecosystem. Which, by the way, when you start using it with value for value, you start making money from day one, from hour one. I mean, who can give you that? It's true. I was thinking about that. If you're set up and you got one person testing it, you're making money right away.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait for some, reconciliation with the agents and the broker and the ad agency and the network and whatever. And then, you know, it's still pennies. You get them right away with us.
Well, that's what bothers. When it comes down to it, the revelation that I had sort of this week, it's been swirling around in my mind since last year when we started this whole thing of, why do I care so much about free speech and not jumping in the middle as an editor? And it's because of this, this whole topic. It's because reality is more complicated than we want to make it. And if we are only looking at it from one side, and let's just say the American side in this issue, or the side of the West, quote unquote, then you're excluding an entire view of what is happening in that country that you're not even seeing. And so from that perspective, like, it is so hard to, it's not hard. It's impossible to sit back as a third party and make unbiased decisions about speech and whether those things that somebody is saying is independently right or wrong. It from only your side of the fence, and I think these sorts of things just show it clearly. And because I'm uncomfortable making concrete decisions about other people's speech because of that. And so I think like that's what I'm trying to get at is these issues where it shows up and everybody freezes. They're so helpful because they're good
moments.
The
yes, yeah. They're good moments, exactly. And people will get that. I had that moment myself a little bit, although in a different way, watching the Apple WWDC video.
Oh, okay. Tell me about that.
The first thing I was like, wow, it's beautiful. I mean, everything they make is just beautiful. Look at how that flows. It's seamless, you know, moving shit across devices and windows. We've all seen it. I mean, it's been around, but they just make it work so elegantly. And then you realize as you get more and more into it, they are closing the door. They are raising the walls even higher, and already the content that you can or cannot get. I mean, they are effectively disregarding podcasting altogether. They're disregarding it. All they care about, the quality shows in their mind, which is the same subjective evaluation of speech or free speech. Is something good or not? But they have certain ideas what quality stands for, and that would typically be from organizations, that are established media's companies, etc.
Right.
And they'll do their subscription services, of which Apple takes 30% or 15% if you do well. And they just don't care. They do not care, and they're going to determine what you can and cannot consume on the inside, and they're not bashful. That's part of their marketing. Yes, we keep you safe.
Yeah, I talked to a podcast hosting company guy on the phone this week, and uh, I was we're having the same conversation, and he was saying that, he said, well, you know, I think, you know, Apple cares about, he said, I don't think they would want to disrupt the whole advertising industry. And I said, you know, I completely disagree with that. I don't think that they would want to, but I don't think they care one bit if they do.
Nope.
And because, you know, that was one of the things that came out of the Apple thing is everybody talking about private relay and everything going through a VPN. And this is going, if I'll go ahead and plant my flag here, you know, write it down, is that if right now it's supposedly only Safari that's going to, everything's going to be going through this private relay.
Oh no, everything's going to go through it.
Yeah. It'll extend to the rest of the OS.
Yep.
And Apple
will block dangerous URLs.
And they'll block it, and it will look like, from an advertising, from the IAB perspective,
it'll look like it was delivered.
It'll look like everything's coming from the same address. And it's going to completely break. It's going to completely break download stats.
Yeah.
I don't know how long it'll take, but within the next 3 years, they are going to completely break down traditional download statistics coming from podcasting on the Apple platform.
Okay, let me plant my flag. In 3 years, it won't matter. No, podcasting 2.0 in 3 years, Dave, we're not even, what are we, 10 months now? We have already fulfilled our promises. You know, one, preserve podcasting as a platform for free speech. Two, turn it into a platform of value of which the entire ecosystem benefits. And along those lines, I wanted our app developers in particular to take note. You know, we had a nice time with Roy, and Roy came in from Tel Aviv, and he really came to see us. I think, you know, mainly, of course, he knows everybody in the business. He's been in it quite a while, but you know, this is a small company, but it's a company, and they have investors, and they have staked their business on this. The seriousness of Breeze being a player in the podcast app space, it's a big part of their business. You know, they raise money on it because they say, hey, look, we're making actual money. Yeah, it's bits and bobs here and there, although they do 5%. No one complains, I might add.
Yeah,
I mean, we have a lot of negotiation against ourselves in this business. You know, he's so serious about Bitcoin and overall Lightning specifically, you know, that we agreed that that we would work out a way to, with the first test, use the WebLN protocol in the Breeze app so that you can bring up a web app. And in this case, now, he doesn't want another podcast app, understandably, but for just video, and we're working with Steve B of CurioCaster to get that implemented with WebLN hooks. And that's a game changer.
Yeah, I think you need to explain what that means to people, because nobody has any idea what you're talking about with WebLN.
Okay. So there's a protocol called WebLN, which allows you to have regular web links, I guess web hooks you'd call them or whatever, to interact with a Lightning Nodes API. And if you've ever used a Lightning wallet and you've looked at the marketplace, that's pretty much all WebLN. It's just a web browser, but it's, you know, it's not giving you full web browser capability, except in the Blue wallet, they do have that. And so the idea is, in the future, this is the way I envision it, in the future, you will download a browser, and that browser will be a wallet. And it works like a browser, does everything your browser does. You know, it's Chromium based from I don't care what it is. But then when you hit a page that says, hey, you've got to pay for this or support this here, you just tap on it and boom, you got a cocktail. It then makes the payment right from that wallet. So, the marketplace in the Breeze app, every single one of those choices, you're basically just hitting another web page, only you don't see it that way. It's a web app is what it is. Only it's a web app with hooks to the wallet that it's functioning in, which is the only way to do it right now on both of the major OSs.
And that brings it, and that brings this right back to the Apple thing, which was,
oh, it got kicked. Yeah, the Blue the Wallet, cards. The Blue Wallet had that browser in there, and the Apple Store kicked them out.
Did they?
Yeah.
Did that happen within the last couple of days?
No, no. This was a, I think this was a year and a half ago. They had to remove that because, from what I understand from Roy, is that Apple does not allow dynamic content in their apps. You might as well give up. I mean, it's going to be web apps or nothing. It's over. They will take you to court every single time to fight you on anything that they consider to be their terrain, their turf.
Well, look at what they did with the digital gift cards. So they came out and said, new App Store policy, if you sell digital gift cards in your app, we're going to start taking 30% of that. If you sell physical gift cards, that's okay. But digital gift cards, we're going to start from this day forward, taking 30%.
Yeah.
That's going to destroy an off ramp. For Bitcoin.
It's no coincidence. No coincidence is coming now. Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
And that is, just look, the tone deafness and the arrogance that company has sometimes just baffles me, because this is a company that's already on thin ice in so many circles for anti-competitive behavior for App Store, price gouging, and all these kinds of things. And then they just, what do they do? Do they take a more humility position? No. They look around and say, is there anything falling through the cracks here that we have not sucked every last penny out of?
Yeah.
Oh, there's one. Gift cards. Get it before it gets away. You know, it's like, are you kidding me?
You know?
And I don't think people understand that. So, like, if you go into the Breeze app, if you're playing podcasts, there, one of the things you can do is you can do a thing called Bit Refill, which you can take your balance in the Breeze wallet, and you can go and buy like an Amazon gift card.
No, anything. Like no, anything. It's not just, I mean, you can literally buy a code for anything you can think of.
Roy used it to get an Uber.
Yeah. His credit card got jammed because of his, you know, overseas travel, or, you know, maybe the company's bankrupt. I mean, it could be, who knows?
Yeah,
just kidding.
And then he used it and it saved his bacon to get an Uber.
Yep.
But Apple's is about, no, can't have that.
There's also the real hack of Bit Refill is you can also put it into a Bit Refill wallet. So you take $5 in Sats, it goes in, boom, they'll give you a price right away. There's almost no commission for that. I think zero actually. Boom, it's dollars in your Bit Refill wallet.
Oh, wow.
That's a good way to hedge, you know, to hedge your money. If you need some access to cuck bucks, then you can have it right there. And I'm not kidding. You need to fly. Boom. You can do it with airlines. You need to grocery shopping. Boom. Everybody has a card of one sort or the other, and you can really order almost anything you need.
And think about it from the standpoint of a developer. I don't know if you read that article by Marco about the just terrible developer relations.
Oh, of course. Of course. It was a seminal article.
What in the world does that transaction have to do with Apple that they could justify 30%?
Mm-hmm.
30, a third of the transaction total of you taking money out of or Bitcoin out of a wallet in an app that you have, and go and do a transaction through what is essentially a WebView wrapper in the app with another party. What? I mean, that is no different than taking a gift card that you bought through an email and plugging it into Safari on iOS into the Amazon website.
Again, the writing is on the wall. You're going to have to make web apps. There's no other way to look at it. And you might as well start now if you plan to be on Apple. Now, Apple will become less and less important over time. There's only so many people who can afford a Range Rover. And kind of put it at that level. Now, not Rolls-Royce, although they have Rolls-Royce features, but it's a Range Rover. And, you know, that's expensive. For me, I've already opted out of so many things of quote-unquote normal life. I've always tried to get off of Apple, and the hardest part was the phone. And this Graphene OS gives me the same amount of joy that I used to get from an Apple, except now, hey, there's an update to the stable channel, and it loads that day. You know, I get new features all the time. I know that if I want to suggest something, I know where to find the people who are doing it. I mean, it's not quite as beautiful. It's not a Range Rover. It's just not. Yeah. It's not a Lada either.
Well, when they do these sorts of things, they think it's like in their mind, they think they are making their platform more attractive by raising the quality, evidently, of the app to be a sort of a native first class app. But what they're doing is they're just driving people away from the platform. Because I'm so close to bailing on an iPhone.
Well, I bailed when they fucked up USB. That's when I bailed. I'm like, okay, you don't care about professionals.
Yeah. There's going to be something with each person. And as crazy as it may sound, this gift card thing really, really griped me to no end.
Yeah.
it may be something as simple as that could something seemingly innocuous to probably most people that makes me just jump ship and get out of this thing. I'm just tired of it.
Let's reach out to Marco. I'd love to talk to him. Let's get him on the show if he's interested. I think he would be, maybe.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to talk. I want to find out. I want to know. I want to get to know him.
Yep.
And I'm a podcaster, damn it. Talk to me.
Roy is awesome. Love getting to meet him. Tim from LNP is awesome.
Yeah, and we worked out without saying too much because we're still figuring it out. I think we figured out a good jeans mom experience for podcasters that we're working on now. I'm going to see if we can make all the pieces fit together.
Yeah. So we're
pretty excited about that. Yeah. I'm pretty excited about that. Some good technology out there.
Meeting people in person is so nice. It's so nice. I mean, you can get something. You can sit down with somebody and with a beer and talk about something and get something hashed out in like
so quick,
no time. Yeah. The 1/100th of the time it takes to like go back and forth across the internet a million times.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that have been going on. Podping update.
Brian got himself funded.
Yeah. love that. I love Me that. Too. True value for value. Circle of life.
It's the DHF, the Decentralized Hive Fund, I think is what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And he put out there as a project, and evidently the way it works, I'm not 100% sure on all the details, but evidently the DH people vote for your project, and then you say, okay, well, I want this amount of money to help me work on this project, and everybody votes on it, and then if your vote gets over a certain threshold, you just get the money.
It's kind of like Castapod in France.
Yeah. Except, but without the socialism.
Without the socialism. Well, it's beautiful because it shows that both systems can contribute. That's a completely capitalist system, the Hive fund. Although, of course, capitalist doesn't mean people aren't philanthropic, because we know you got to drive innovation somehow, or the socialist way, which know that you have to drive innovation, and then it just comes down to checking the boxes.
Yeah, filling out the right forms.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad. I'm so glad for him because he's put so much effort into this. It's great. And we finally got. Do we want to do some namespace talk? Because that ties into this.
Are you kidding? Anytime, baby.
And now it's time for some hot namespace.
And I have
talk.
To say that the hot namespace talk we did in Miami was great in person.
Don't you do that? The namespace, it's all phase three is done, except for I'm going to also formalize the GUID tag. I'm working on that right now.
Now this is the global ID that Cridlin was talking about this on Podland, and I wouldn't mind a quick explainer of how important the GUID is.
Yeah, so one of the problems is there is no universal ID within podcasting, so everybody uses the feed URL. So I've got a podcast over here called Dave's Killer Podcast, and the feed URL is on RSS.com, and it's, you know, feeds.rss.com/123456 blah 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 .xml. So that's how everybody knows me. Or either they use the Apple Podcast ID or the iTunes ID. Well, right. if you're not in Apple,
you don't have Podcasts, one.
You don't have one of those.
Right. So are we going to assign everybody an ID? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, the standard will assign everybody an ID.
Yes.
That's what this will be. So if the problem this is trying to solve, there's multiple problems, but the biggest one is that if Dave's Amazing Podcast at RSS.com then moves over to Fireside, now the feed URL is different and nobody knows it's the same. So the best case scenario.
Okay.
The best case scenario is I had an Apple ID, an Apple Podcast ID or an iTunes ID, and then I went into Apple Podcast Connect and changed my feed URL, and then somebody's aggregator goes in behind me, checks the feed URL returned by Apple's iTunes API, and sees that it has a different feed URL and switches it in their database.
Right.
That's best case scenario. Obviously, that's less than ideal for an open podcasting ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Worst case scenario is aggregators pick this up as a second feed, and now you have a duplicate.
Yeah.
And so the database holds two copies of Dave's Amazing Podcast, one at RSS.com, one at Fireside. So what this would, the GUID, what this is going to do is everybody gets, as their podcast stands, at the moment when they implement this tag, and this will be it'll be podcast colon GUID.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment a podcast implements that GUID tag, they will take the current feed URL of their podcast and they will create what's called a UUID 5 hash. And that is it's a SHA-1 hash combined with a particular seed value that's called a namespace. And so you have UUID namespaces, and we have created a namespace number. And so you'll take as your inputs to the SHA-1 hash, you'll take your current feed URL as it is at the moment this thing is generated, and combine it with that namespace identifier, and it'll spit out a value.
Mm-hmm.
And that value is what you're going to plug into the GUID tag.
Okay.
Once that happens, you've just assigned yourself a GUID.
Got it.
And that GUID will never change for the life of your podcast, no matter how many different host hopping you do. So if you move from one podcast host to the next, and that podcast, if I move from RSS.com to Fireside, then what Fireside should do as an open standard, Fireside should read my feed when it goes to import it, see the GUID tag, and pull that in and continue to use it for the podcast. So now your GUID that was assigned at one point in time is now traveling with you as you go through the podcast ecosystem.
Very cool.
So
you can't. Now you can't reverse engineer the feed URL from that hash, can you?
No, SHA-1's okay. A one-way function.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Yeah, but this will allow for a lot of benefits.
Okay, so what we need is a widget that I can put on my website or that I can tweet that says "Get my GUID."
Yeah.
Just so people get comfortable with it. Oh, here I am. This is my unique podcast GUID.
And it, you could, we can
get it on t-shirts. We can do it on QR codes, t-shirts. Yeah. Ooh, that'd be very sexy.
Foreheads, the backs of hands.
Tattoos. Yes. Oh, yeah. And of course, a QR code. Oh, dynamite. So then it's real easy to subscribe to stuff and all this other jazz because it's universally known.
Yeah, and we will, brilliant. As soon as we put this thing out, which I'm hoping to get it out this weekend, as soon as we put this thing in the spec, I'm going to put in to track these GUIDs into our database, and then there will be a public dump. You know, it'll come out into the feed dump that we do every week.
We're just going
to
spam the world with GUIDs.
Yeah, we'll just GUID everybody.
we're splashing our GUID goo over you, people. Nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it'll allow for easier subscriptions for things. It'll allow for easier tracking.
So the only people who really need to adopt this is people who either have web apps, regular apps, anyone who accesses the functionality of the index, no matter where it is, I guess web pages.
Directories. So that you could, like, if you want to address yourself, like if you want to find a podcast on, Overcast.
Yeah.
Well, then, you'll have to know how they the internal IDs for Overcast. If you want to, or maybe they use Apple IDs, or if you want to find it on Downcast, well, then you have to know their internal IDs. And then the same with Podcast Index, you'd have to know our ID system.
Right. Now it's just one everybody. Universal. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do we get people to adopt this?
Well, we put it in the same way we get them to adopt everything. We put it
we hold a gun to their head. Implement or this puppy dies.
we threaten to have Drip Scott put nasty images of them in the chat drawer.
Of your damn possum.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, over their breakfast.
Yeah. Oh, man.
It's a foolproof plan that works every time.
Should we thank a few people, Dave?
Is it that far into the show?
We're an hour in, yeah. I mean, I hope people are still with us. They might have gone, I don't know what this board meeting is. El Salvador, what the hell?
Yeah, we did kind of spend a long time. That's my fault. We did spend a long time on El Salvador.
That's why there's
10 things here I hadn't even talked about.
That's why there's a fast forward button. No, but we don't have to end the show. I'm just saying, let's just do that now, and then we can talk as long as we want. I'm in no rush.
Let's see. Yeah, we got people, man. We got lots of people. Let's see what we got. Oh, let's see. John Lips gave us 111.11.
Nice.
Where is?
I've seen Lips. I've seen Lips.
Oh, have you?
Yeah, he's a No Agenda producer too. Sends me lots of stuff. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, man.
Oh, here it is. He had a note. For some reason, when I printed these out, they printed out double sided. No.
How annoying. Yeah, you can't crumple them.
Free t-shirt. He said, this is a note. Free t-shirt. Go podcasting. Yeah. Go paper crumple.
Go podcasting!
PreservePodcasting.com. Happy Father's Day. Hugs.
Okay. Thanks, Luke.
Thank you, John. John, I don't think I got a t-shirt mailing address for you.
Oh, so we need to have that. Yeah, we're sending them out. The t-shirts are in. And do you have Roy's address? I promise Roy one.
I don't think I do. I'll need to email. So Eric is clearly annoyed by my lack of organization with the t-shirt stuff. Because he created a spreadsheet in the Dropbox. And he was like, do we have, who are we going to send these to? Who are we going to send these to? And Eric, if he was in charge of this, he would be like, he would have already created like a web form and it would be updating a spreadsheet and sending it to the shipper automatically. Yeah. It would be all this nice stuff. And with me, I'm like, okay, if you want a shirt, give us an email. And he's like, no. So anyway, sorry. My apologies, Eric. I totally screwed this up.
We'll get this streamlined. We will.
Yeah. But he said that he's going to ship out the first batch.
I wore it on Max Kaiser's RT show, so I wore it proudly.
Which is yet to be published, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what their schedule is. It could take a week or two. I have no idea.
Okay.
Oh, and also, just as a side note, I haven't promoted this, but Cridlin talked about it on Podland. Mm-hmm. I'm on the cover of Radio Inc.
That's a print magazine.
Month.
Right?
It is a print magazine, and it is a you know, they've got a big conference coming up. I'm going to be talking. It's all about podcasting 2.0. The problem I have is, I don't know. I mean, we sent them a whole bunch of pictures. I look like, I look horrendous on the cover. I get sick to my stomach looking at myself. Like, what the hell is this picture? Why? It's oh my God. I have a fair amount of vanity, but this is, oh my God. And Tina's like, it's not that bad. Well, you know what that is in chick speak. So I haven't read the article yet, but oh my goodness.
Well, if they're going to, you know, usually when you're like, if you got an article or featured in a,
No, they're sending me copies. They're sending me copies. Yeah.
Maybe you should just call them and tell them, don't send the copies. Just
keep them. I want to read the article. It's not online. I want to read it. But anyway, it's a big push, and we're, you know, talking to radio people. So they understand a lot of this stuff. So it'll be fun. Anyway,
you're going to be talking though
July 14th, I believe. Okay. A keynote fireside chat.
Ooh.
Yeah, nice. I know. It means cozy. I don't have to go anywhere. I can stay home.
You stay home in your robe.
Yes, I shall. All right, you got it. I'll wear my robe. Hello, okay, everybody.
Spencer from Bowl After Bowl podcast gave us $100.
Oh, man. The Bowl After Bowl guys are pushing the value for value so hard.
Yeah, he came in with a whimper, and he is just coming out like he's developing a roar over there. There's a lot of people that like that podcast.
Which tells me the idea of podcasting 2.0 with streaming value for value and weed is an excellent combination.
It seems to be. Yes.
Just a tip.
Yeah, when he came in and first started doing this, he's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not sure how to do all this. And then now he's just like on
off
a roll,
to the races. You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
His message says, I will send Dave and Adam note by email. Thanks for your hard work and dedication. Let's see. Here's his note. Thanks for everything you and the crew have been building here at Podcast 2.0. We were so excited to jump aboard and be among the first podcasters receiving sats to our show Bowl After Bowl after spinning up our first node last December. Fast forward half a year and we see our Sphinx tribe growing. We see real value being returned and we're on a mission to get more podcasters and listeners on board and participating.
Nice.
The recent discussion you two had about the MORE Act, the MORE, that's the Marijuana Act, and the implications it had on trusting our government and its currency really struck a chord with us. We've covered the MORE Act's progress extensively on our show, and we believe descheduling cannabis is the most important drug policy goal at the federal level. Thanks and blessings for remaining freedom-oriented. We are eager to help usher in a better future for our children with the help of the tools y'all are working so passionately to bring to the world. Love is lit.
Love is lit, man. Yeah.
Sir Spencer and Dame DeLorean.
Thank you, too. And remember to remind everybody to check out newpodcastapps.com. There's a whole variety. There's a whole bunch of them. But I love it. They really got the Sphinx tribe rocking. That's really working for them.
They're at bowlafterbowl.com. This is the website. Thanks, guys. So I'll read off some. I got to say this. I got to give an apology up front to Kyle Hebert, because I pronounced his name Kyle Hebert.
Oops.
Which is clearly wrong, because Kyle Hebert is from the great state of Louisiana. And so, of course, it would.
It would have a French. Yes, indeed. Hebert.
Yeah. So Kyle Hebert. And our monthly donors are Kevin Roa, $5, Sir Hey Moose, $50, Droidworks, $20, Scott Jalbert, $12, Mark Graham, $1, Joseph Maraca, $5, David Midas, $10, Cameron Rose, $25, Jeremy New, $5, Greg Thomas, $5, and then Podverse gave us $50.
Oh, nice.
And its founder, Mitch Downey, gave us $10. And then Lauren Ball gave us $24.20. And Michael Neumann gave us $10.66. And he is doing the Lord's work by keeping the team's repo updated with all the contributors.
That's fantastic. That's really cool.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Things like that that people can do to help are so valuable, because I find on a weekly basis that sometimes I'm so spread out in different repos and doing different things that I just can't, it's like it's overload.
Right.
So when somebody does that and they jump in there and just like, hey, I'll do this thing, I'm like, oh, that's so great. It's like a breath of fresh air. It's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. yeah. Like, yeah, exactly.
So that's the group.
Very nice. Thank you all so much for supporting Podcasting 2.0, this podcast and the work that's being done, keeping the server rooms warm and spinning, and allowing us to have a reason for these board meetings. You're all doing it. We're just reporting on it. Well, actually, Dave's doing it, a lot of it. please go to podcastindex.org, scroll down to the bottom, big red donate button. You can also look at your Podcasting 2.0 app right there. There should be a funding tag. You can tap on that, and it'll open up our Cuckbuck portal. We accept those, of course. The best way to support us, or the most fun way, I think, is to boost. Keep on boosting, everybody.
Boost.
Here's your cue to boost. You know you want to.
Uh-huh.
I like the little ending jingle there. The
little ting-a-ling. Yeah, exactly.
The wind chimes.
Exactly.
Did you see Pod LP on the KaiOS?
Yes, and I've used that. I used to have a. I still have it. I still have a flip phone.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot you used KaiOS for a while.
Oh yeah, very impressive. I really like it a lot. I mean, when we started Podcasting 2.0, I needed to get something faster, just because we're really communicating. But you can get all kinds of apps on it, and the whole point of a flip phone without a real a keyboard is you don't want to use it because it's annoying. However, to have podcasts, which I did use when I was carrying it around, to have podcasts on is fantastic. It does Bluetooth too. You can do Bluetooth from a lot of these flip phones.
Those ones are cheap, right?
Like $150.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. And from what I understand, they will also be implementing eventually, I hope, the alternate enclosure tag from the namespace to help out. And this is just one use of the alternate enclosure, but there's a lot of countries where these phones are very popular, where a low bit rate or a smaller, less bandwidth hungry file size would be greatly appreciated.
James already put that into his feed.
He was driving that totally. Now for us, of course, there's more reasons to use the alternate enclosure. And I'm very excited about my first WebTorrent podcast reception or my first IPFS download. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait for this stuff to happen. And it's such an important moment, this particular tag, to me.
I think this is sort of a milestone within... I don't want to be too grandiose, but I think this is sort of a milestone within all of podcasting.
I agree.
Because... now you have the ability to do so many things, like not just low bit rate, alternate bit rate versions, but you can, I was explaining it to Melissa last night, and she's not, she usually doesn't care about this kind of stuff, but I was explaining it to her, and she was getting excited about it. She's like, because I was like, well, you can do low bit rate for feature phones and for high cost bandwidth areas. You can do flipping back and forth between video and audio. In the same feed item, you can do live streams.
Mm-hmm.
You can do alternate tracks, like director's cuts or accompanying tracks. Honestly, you could put clips and stuff in there, like source companion supporting clips. You can do with what Alex and Steve B. We got to have Steve B. on the show.
Yes,
from CurioCaster. Which you can do. What they've already proven. They just did it today. Is showing that you can do the WebTorrent stuff, and so
he implemented that today.
They were showing it. Yeah, there's a chart showing a torrent from like every. So you'd have like five people. Let's just say that you have five people watching a show, watching a video from in a tube.
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody cranks up a video on Nogenda Tube. Well, then a second person cranks up a video on Nogenda Tube. And they begin to peer with each other, and you're sharing bandwidth two ways. Then a third person comes on. Every extra person watching that video joins the web torrent, and you can see on the graph the bandwidth goes down as on Alex's side as more people watch the same video.
Cool.
It's mind blowing.
Who posted this?
Stephen B. and Alex Gates, they were kind of going back and forth on it with the on the Mastodon.
Ah, okay.
They were doing testing. Yeah.
Oh, it's so cool. Wow.
Man. Yeah. Yes. It'll blow your mind. And that is like, that's next level stuff, man.
I'm gonna put that I'm gonna put the link to that thread in the show notes. Holy crap! Because
that can make video actually doable for podcast hosts.
No kidding. Oh, you man, know, that's gonna be so cool.
I can imagine that a podcast hosting company would want to support video, and they could go in and spin up an instance of PeerTube, and then they could just host. They could host those videos on PeerTube in a WebTorrent fashion. And then all of their listeners are swarming the bandwidth together, and it's not all on the host.
Love that.
It's just so awesome.
Yeah. Love that. Love that.
I really do think this is pretty groundbreaking stuff.
And so I guess we already have two implementations now.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the requirement for the requirement for the namespace tag adoption is that you're going to have, we have to have at least one host that committed to supporting it, mm-hmm. and one app that's committed to supporting it. And we already had, we already had Alex, he's with PeerTube, mm-hmm. and James, who mm-hmm. committed to supporting it on the tag side. And then Steve B and Martin have both committed to supporting it on the app side.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Wow, yeah. Man. So I need to promote that somehow.
Oh, it's so cool. And now, like now it, Once the testing is done and Stephen and Martin are supporting it and feel comfortable with the apps, then we can begin to promote things like Killing Ed.
Yeah,
because
exactly.
It's not such a bandwidth drain
on NATube. Yeah,
on Alex. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, this could be so much fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Tina and I were planning. We're doing our will planning. She's so organized.
Like, oh, wow. That's way more forward thinking than I am.
Well, we're in our 50s and it's time, why not? And so we're talking to the lawyer on the Zoom call. And this is a connection we have through Mark Hall. He's a lawyer, even though he's a documentarian. I think he does import export law with Panama. I love Mark. I just talk about documentaries with him. I don't want to know about his other business. But he said, no, you want to talk to her because, there's lots of ways you can protect yourself for your kids, really, is what it is. Just valuing these businesses you have a stake in, No Agenda Show LLC and Podcast Index LLC. And I'm like, well, Podcast Index is kind of hard to value anything. He said, but I've heard from Mark that you guys are, you are creating the future. She just went on and on and on and on and on about how fantastic this project was. We got big promoters out there, and Mark is going to be really instrumental in bringing more filmmakers to the platform.
That's really exciting to me to see the video side of things. Mm-hmm.
Music after that, Dave.
Yeah, 100%.
We got 100%. Sir Axel. Sir Alex, Alex Kirby, Alex Kirby.
Well, he's the one. He's going to do an album, right?
Abel Kirby. Yes, I only know him as Sir Abel Kirby. I'll give you an example of some of his stuff here.
He's a day trader. Better pick hard.
Better sell hard.
Better fight those algos.
Well, they made this a better example. This
copyright
one.
And public right.
I don't know what he's doing here.
What's he talking about? Fighting the algos?
Yeah.
Sharing's wrong.
I don't know what that is. I want to find one that's a classic, but he has chops. He really does.
Yeah.
So he's doing an album with a band. They've already done their contract based upon value block splits.
Hmm.
So that's going to translate one-to-one from their contract into, each member of the band gets X percentage. I'm not sure what they've done. And he wants to release, do a feed and have each of the each of the tracks in the feed, and then whatever, you know, he'll figure out. He's going to pioneer that stuff and figure out where it really works and what the issues are.
And guess what? You don't need any executives or any of that stuff. You just need an XML block.
Yep. And all the features of podcasting, I mean, your lyrics in real time, your cover art, but different art for each track. You can have a link to something. You can have bonus episodes. You can have out with the alternate enclosures you just explained. You can maybe have a different mix. There's so many different things that could be done. It's very, very exciting.
Or a commentary track. Say, yeah, here's like the making of this song.
Yep.
You know, that'd be, and then here's also where the license tag comes into play, because you can you put the license right into your feed.
Yep. Yep.
And say, here's how I'm licensing this content. And if you find out that one of the free podcast hosts has ripped off your content, you go and
show them. Sure. Yep. And just a quick thing. I saw a couple people post about it, and I think it was also a topic on Podland about having license information for content you're using in the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's, I was wanting to.
It's unnecessary. It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant. That would be like NBC continuously putting on screen or having a way for you to find out if they paid for the music in that episode. It's virtue signaling. That's all it is. There's nothing else to it.
But isn't there a way, like, so I think what the, if I understood it right, and correct me if I'm wrong, so because I thought it was a good idea, so I may be wrong. If you go ahead and put into your feed, here is my license from this music agency, and here's the license number or whatever it is, then when their systems are scanning the internet trying to find violations, they could programmatically read your feed and see that you're not a violator before they issue a DMCA or something. That was my understanding.
Okay, that's different. That's different. What I understood the request to be was provide the licensing information of content inside of your show, not if you are licensed to use it. I mean, that's not even a license. You're just saying, see, a license is what the content creator provides a license. Right. Having the right to use that in my podcast is not. It is a license, but it's the other side. So as long as I adhere to that license, I'm in compliance. It's more like compliance than anything. So it's not a license tag. It's a compliance tag for a certain subset of content. And honestly, we're inviting in the boogeyman.
Well, see, like, so Sam had a good use case, I thought, because he said, well, what I want to do, because he's running a radio station now, and he would say, and what he's using, I think it's Wooshka, and that system, what it does is it takes his live stream, chops it up into predefined segments based on time codes, and then publishes those things out automatically as separate RSS, as separate podcast mm-hmm. episodes. Mm-hmm. So he was thinking, oh, if I had a way to signal to the world through XML, through a structured data in the feed, that here's my, this podcast is going to have music in it, and here's the license that I bought to cover this content, and that way the license holders would not, or the whoever has those is in charge of that, would not take him down or you know, complain about him, because they can see in his feed, here's his license number, and he actually did license this stuff ahead of time properly.
Okay, that's not how I understood it. This makes sense, but if anyone thinks it's going to move music licensing forward, you're sadly mistaken. I would much rather put our energy into completely, because, you know, he was talking about PRI, you know, it's a performance license. You know, that very, just by doing that, mm-hmm. ASCAP, BMI, Harry Fox Agency, CSAC, they're all going to go, oh, hold on a second. You need a license from us as well to use that, because someone in France downloaded this. And by the way, these performing rights organizations, they will change your fee rate on a dime. I choose, just like Apple, to not deal with them. I and whatever anyone wants to do, of course, is fine. I feel focusing on new forms of royalty distribution without any middleman is the future. Mm-hmm. Why would we deal with the old stuff? I mean, I like playing old songs, but no, this is not going to work that way. We just, you have to cut it off somewhere.
Well, that's why you don't do a music podcast. Guess why you don't do one is because you've said before that you've been unable to find any license structure that works properly for that content.
They don't want it. They don't want it. You know, Spotify is owned mainly by shareholders who are record companies. You know, they were all in on the deal. Mm-hmm. And no one's really happy with the Spotify arrangement who was a creative performer. No one.
So if you were going to go and do Adam Curry's Top 40, then podcast, you basically couldn't. I mean, they would either not give you a license, or the license would be so financially prohibitive.
No,
that you couldn't do a show.
But what would be possible is in the future, I could say, and now, boys and girls, here's the latest track from Abel Kirby, and I could play that, and I could have that portion of the show tagged somehow that it spits out sats to Abel Kirby, or I could just put him in a value block for that episode and give him a piece that we agreed to earlier. It'll be podcasting is not really geared towards programmatic stuff.
That's when all the bands start saying, yeah, man, I'm huge in El Salvador.
You know what I mean? It's by the way, it's a good idea. Since you have the split right there in the value block, someone could open up a special boost just to the band.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
The bottom line is when you get really stringent and tight, which is the old world system with exact rules and regulations, it bogs everything down. And here it's just, okay, let's forget about the traditional stuff and let's just do it on value for value. Everyone makes more money. This is my takeaway. You will long term, you will do much better, and it'll be much more satisfying.
By the way, I think I may have figured out a way to crack the paywall, the universal subscription nut.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got to give it some more thought. But somebody, Daniel Jason Lewis, brought it up on the repo for the namespace, like a way to do sort of a universal subscription mechanism for podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I may have figured it out. It's hard, but I'll probably talk about it on the next show.
Is it one using any currency or only sats or PayPal?
It would be any currency. The fastest the fastest would obviously be SATs, because it's just boop boop boop, you're done. Scan QR, done.
Right.
But this, you could fit this model, and I'm just thinking of it as a structure of how a podcast app can interact with it can see something in the feed and then know how to interact to make that subscription mechanism work.
Oh, okay.
I've got a sheet of paper right here with it all drawn out, and I think it will work. I think I'm going to try to run it by somebody this week to make sure that I'm not, if there's not some huge hole in my thinking. But I think I've cracked that nut.
I just want to just add one more thing to the performing rights organizations. The way they do this is, for if you have X amount of downloads, and you can't do this with ASCAP BMI, you can do it with BUMA, STEMRA in the Netherlands, PRI, you know, everyone has, there are some web-based licenses, very stringent. It can't, you know, it's the streaming, they had streaming playlists is what the most recent kind of licensors were created for. And you have to, very tight reporting requirements. But the way they do it is they'll say, okay, you have 50,000 or it's more like 10,000 max, and you pay maybe 500 a year. You go over that, then it's a percentage of your revenue.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. And
that's huge.
Well, if you have a bar, just so you know, or a restaurant, and you play music, you will get ASCAP BMI in the United States knocking on your door saying, okay, how many people come through here a year? All right, that's great. You play music, so we're going to charge you $800 a month.
Dang. I had no idea that you would get that in a restaurant.
We went to the conference. That conference paid a large sum for all music being performed publicly.
Huh.
I've seen inspectors from ASCAP BMI type organizations at public events and saying, excuse me, can I see your license? No license? Really? Oh, we're going to send you a bill plus a fine.
That's ridiculous. So you can't really, you couldn't, if I'm a restaurant, I can't just turn on the radio.
If you are a workplace with more than three people, you have to pay a license fee. If you have, like a workshop where you have a garage and you got the radio playing, they will come by and they will tell you you need to pay.
So if I'm in my office building, I cannot have a Spotify subscription and pump it over the PA system
for
100 employees.
No, sir. No, well, you can.
Yeah, until they find out.
Yes.
Jeez, I had no idea it was that restrictive.
And so if you think that you're going to have fun creating something for these guys to know that you're legal, oh, brother. That's why I don't do music, because I don't want to deal with it. And I've been very patient, and it's coming, and it's going to happen, and we'll get there. But it can't be the existing infrastructure. It can't. That's just the thieves. They are thieves.
I share your despair. Now that you've laid it out.
Now that you understand the parameters in the real world, these guys are everywhere. It's not just the radio and television and podcast. It's everywhere. Every single place you play music openly for people, you can and you will eventually get a visit.
Yeah, that's no good. That's no good. That falls into the category of I don't mind doing it, but I don't want to try to implement it myself.
But in general, when I listen to the industry talking about podcasting, it's pathetic. Everyone, like, we have an award show, we have multiple award shows, we have, all this infrastructure trying to be like the mainstream, in fact, I think many people create podcasts to become part of the mainstream, which honestly is a great way to go, particularly in the true crime arena. You know, you have a good story, you can sell that story, they turn a podcast into a Netflix miniseries. I mean, for sure, but everything is, how do we make it so advertising works? How do we make it so that, we've got networks, and you're just seeing like that story about the podcast house in Vox magazine, I think.
That seemed like a hit piece on that one dude.
But the problem is that podcast networks like iHeart and even Spotify to a degree, Spotify will have the same problem. You have a lot of different shows, and what are you promising? Revenue and exposure. I know this because I did this, and I failed at it, and I know why. And it's not because we were not good. It's because it can't be done. You cannot monetize a network like that, not in an open system. And even Spotify will find that the amount of bullshit you get from people who are not the hits, you're going to have two hits out of 200 shows. And everyone else is going to be unhappy. I didn't get the promotion. This is how angry podcasters talk. I never get the really big ad buys. How come she's in there? How come I'm not on a cover? Why am I not in rotation? Da, 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 da. And you become part of the whole damn slave system that is the mainstream media, and people are walking right into it. I hear all these podcasts, and their friends, their colleagues, we're working together on this stuff. But I hear you. You are still going after the old way of doing things. And when you talk about Apple and Spotify as the big boys, fuck that noise. They're not. And now Facebook. Oh, everyone's all jacked. Facebook's going to do podcasts. Okay. I'm not so jacked about that, honestly. I also don't think it'll be successful for them. But if they want to use the namespace and the index, I'll be happy as long as they return value.
And then when the network fails, they write articles about you in Vox Media talking about hookers and blow.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it comes right back around. That's value for value, I think.
I, But do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I understand.
I don't want to sound negative. It's just, it's the same thing with Apple. Fuck Apple. I'm not going to use Apple. You know, and is my life going to be completely as convenient? No. But every single time I look at Tina, who has a beautiful iPad Pro, just, you know, a great, great machine. But there's all this stuff that she can't do, can't install, can't look at. I'm like, yeah, I don't want that feeling.
Well, I think that it's the same feeling you get when you're into the Bitcoin ecosystem for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You begin to see that there's another way. And it makes the old way look so frustrating.
Archaic.
It does. Because if you think about it, okay, maybe you don't believe in the whole, maybe you don't believe in Bitcoin or whatever. But you have, once you're in the system, let's just say you have a source of, you know, sats available to you. Then all of a sudden, everything is just so easy and it makes so much sense. And you exclude all of the other people trying to beat down your door to demand money out of you just sort of disappears.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that's this where's that article? The one that I was reading a while ago says, let's see the chunk. Yeah, here it is. On Sunday, Bukele, is the president of El Salvador, tweeted that a quote huge chunk of that $6 billion of remittances is lost to intermediaries who take a cut of the financial transactions in dollars.
Exactly. Well, I mean,
that's the same thing in podcasting and in all media. In media, somebody's got their hand, every step of the way, somebody's got their hand in the cookie jar. And by the time, like you said, you know, your adage is that you know, a huge amount of money goes in one end of the pipe and 4 months later, pennies trickle out the other side.
Yep. Well, that's, no, 48 months later, yeah.
you may get a few pennies.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody wants to, if you look at that, if you hear that description, I don't think anybody would say, oh yeah, let's do that with podcasting. That sounds great.
Well, it's all disintermediation. You know, my phone, I can talk directly to the developers who are making it. I can also compensate them directly. Podcasting, you know, we obviously know that, especially, you know, there is ultimately a direct app to feed connection. Bitcoin, same way. What is Bitcoin? Trust without an intermediary. That's really the big deal. And that's the world. That's the world we live in. No one really talks about it because if people start to figure it out, and in the United States in particular, we are an intermediary culture. Like, oh, my neighbor's music is too loud. I'm going to call the cops. You know, yeah. There's always someone we're calling. We're always calling a lawyer or calling a this or a that. I love this disintermediation. Get people out of the middle.
I like that term better than decentralization. I like disintermediation.
And it's what it is.
It's just funner to say, too.
It rolls off the tongue easier. Yeah,
it does. I agree.
What else do you have in your list, Dave?
Oh, I got like three or four more things, but I want to do that in the next show. We got to get out of here.
Yeah, we got a call. We're actually doing a call. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A rare meeting.
Well, I don't know if it's a meeting. You know, I'm just going to say hi to somebody.
Yeah.
I am so bullish. Ever since Bitcoin 2021, it just feels like there's traction. Here's the main thing that that can be used, even though it's not that important, really. But this coming up on 4 million feeds, and we still live in a culture where, oh my God, they've got 4 million podcasts. We can use that to our advantage. You know, it seems to impress people. It does. People are like, oh man, you guys are kicking ass. You really get, but we do. We have traction. And remember, for all of you podcast app developers out there, and for everybody really who's developing, you too can be making money right now. And yeah, is it drips and drabs? Sure. All that needs to happen is we just need to have more people. The flywheel is spinning. It has not stopped since we turned it on. We just need to heat it up.
Yep. And start buying more search ads in El Salvador.
All right. Then let's close this board meeting. Everybody, thanks for attending. Dave, have a great weekend, my friend.
I give a second. Board meeting closed.
All right. And that's it for Podcasting 2.0. We will return next week on a Friday. Looking forward to it. Have a good one, everybody. Until then, bye-bye.
been listening to Podcasting 2.0. Visit podcastindex.org for more information.
Boost.